This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So now he's going to throw a little hissy fit on his way out the door. And yeah, he's going to kneecap some things you want and some things I want. But the truth is, this is a good thing. There's always going to be some pain purging the GOP of the losers.
We asked all the states to share their voter rolls with us so we could help clean them up through the SAVE database, make sure people who are dead or otherwise not entitled to vote are off the voter rolls.
There is a CBP home app that all of these illegal aliens can use. They can sign up for it. It's $2,600. All they have to do is get the app, download it, and they can be deported.
How many people are even tuned into the news cycle at this time of year in the summer and whatnot when it is actually nice here?
All right. I'm going to make you feel better about something that sucks. You ready for that? It's going to take a hard effort. We have a great show for you tonight on I'm Right, but I'm going to make you feel better, I think, about something that sucks. All right. I know that you still get frustrated with the swampy, rhino, corrupt losers in the Republican Party who are constantly doing us wrong, intentionally screwing us over, holding back the movement, letting the communists get wins. I know you're frustrated with these people. A great example of this is John Cornyn, this guy.
Hi, I'm Texas Senator John Cornyn. The last year has proven quite a challenge as we've navigated the impact of COVID-19. But with safe and effective vaccines finally being administered, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Getting vaccinated is the fastest way that life can return to normal.
Under the effective leadership of Director Ray, the agency has remained committed to doing things independently and by the book.
Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I've called this the most important law that most people have never heard of. It's been called the crown jewel of U.S. intelligence.
We've worked with the NRA to listen to their concerns, but in the end, I think they simply, they have a membership and a business model that will not allow them to support any legislation.
DACA recipients must have a permanent legislative solution. They deserve nothing less. We need to take action and pass legislation that will unequivocally allow these young men and women to stay in the only home, in the only country they've known.
Right? You don't like John Cornyn. I despise him. You know that. And you're frustrated by stories like the one that came out yesterday. Story went something like this. You know all that ridiculous foreign aid that flowed from your wallet in through Washington, D.C. and out to every foreign country for the most ridiculous things in the world. And you're frustrated by that. And I'm frustrated by that. Word is, now that John Cornyn has lost his primary, he is holding up two of Donald Trump's ambassadors, and he's holding them up until the Trump administration releases funds, your money, to flow to Africa to fight butt AIDS. That's real, and you're frustrated by that. Hold on. Let's switch gears and talk about Tom Tillis, because Tom Tillis is busy, too. He's busy screwing you and me over. Here he is.
Mr. President, these people are misleading you if they're telling you that this can be implemented by November. The only thing that will occur is an undermining of the election integrity, the integrity of our elections right now. This seems like a legit proposal, but it isn't. And it hasn't been for the last year because you couldn't have gotten it done with 10,000 election entities if we'd passed it last July. So let's be honest with the American people. Let's focus on getting every state to have voter ID. Let's provide funding that lets the states opt into it and have a consequence if they don't in terms of audits. But let's stop the charade. Let's stop the distraction. Let's get the government funded. Let's use reconciliation if we need to, but let's not clog it up with another piece of policy airdropped by a member of this Senate or the White House that will undermine this bill.
That's Tom Tillis stopping the SAVE Act so foreigners can keep voting. He's obviously not alone. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska out there doing the same thing.
Where do you stand on the Save America Act? Do you, support getting this legislation passed to protect elections?
Not as it is drafted, no.
Why not?
The implementation in a rural state like Alaska is going to disenfranchise an extraordinary majority. And while I support citizenship voting and voting ID, I want to make sure that it's implementable.
Okay. So, how's any of this going to make you feel good? This makes you feel bad. It makes you feel angry. Well, all right, let's talk about something. You ever start working out after you got fat? I have many times before. I'm one of these up and down people. I'll go from doing nothing to working out to doing it. So I'm an expert at this. Doesn't it suck when you start working out again? You hurt all the time. Everything's sore. It sucks. Business starts to go well, small business starts to grow. You have to start adding employees. That's a nightmare. Might have to move locations. You need a bigger building. It's a nightmare. You got more taxes. Growing pains are a thing. And to advance in life oftentimes involves some pain. Do you know why Tom Tillis opposes the SAVE Act? Because Tom Tillis is getting drummed out of the Senate. No, I know he chose to retire, but it looked like the writing was on the wall. So now he's going to throw a little hissy fit on his way out the door. And yeah, he's going to kneecap some things you want and some things I want. But the truth is, this is a good thing. There's always going to be some pain purging the GOP of the losers. John Cornyn's another great example. John Cornyn was never going to win that primary against Ken Paxton. But he's somehow blaming Donald Trump for not endorsing him. Even with Trump's endorsement, John Cornyn, I'm in Texas. John Cornyn was never going to win that primary. But now he's bitter and he's angry. Now he loses the one thing that gave his useless life meaning, his Senate seat. And so in his final months, he's going to spend his time spitting in your face. And we don't like spit in our face, obviously. But I want you to understand, this is being sore after a workout. In the moment, it sucks. It hurts. I don't deny that it hurts. But the pain these people are putting on us right now is actually evidence that we are growing. We are making improvements. These people, look, Bill Cassidy's leaving too. That guy's been a loser in the Senate for years. He lost his primary too. I know you can sit there and point out this senator's still bad and this senator. I understand all that. You understand how much dead weight we are shedding right now in just the past few years? Loser after loser after loser, gone. Be happy. These are pains, but they are growing pains. All right? All right. We got a great show for you tonight. You want to feel better about everything? Why don't you start taking some natural herbal supplements from Chomp? I'm not kidding. You're going to feel better all the time. Better energy, better focus. When you're at home, you're better. On the weekend, you're better. At work, you're better. You might end up getting yourself a promotion. Do you know how much your life will change? If you're, let's say you're a dude and you start taking a male vitality stack from Chalk and your T levels go up 20% in 90 days, do you know how that would change your life? That's real. But I'm 45 years old. My T levels are in the high 700s. Natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I don't need needles in my arm. CHOQ, chalk.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
In June of 2023, nearly 3 years before I became governor, a serious software error in New Jersey's motor vehicle system led to the improper voter registration of what we believe to be roughly 6,600 people in our state. when New Jerseyans applied for a driver's license or identification at the MVC, they were asked if they wanted to register to vote. In the case of this error, some individuals indicated that they weren't citizens and weren't eligible to vote, but the software registered them anyway. Initial analysis shows that fewer than 400 newly registered individuals voted in an election due to this software error.
An error. It's weird how these errors seem to always go one way. Joining me now, my favorite, Harmeet Dhillon, Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the DOJ. Harmeet, I try not to be a cynic. I try to think the best of my fellow man as much as I possibly can, but that sounds to me like somebody who's caught or about to get caught doing something really bad, trying to admit to a little bit of it so they don't get in big, big trouble. What's the real story here?
Well, we don't know the real story, Jesse, but I think your instincts are shared by millions of Americans who've seen this movie before and know the ending. And so let me just break down what we heard there and what we're doing here at DOJ. First of all, I know this is a problem, and you've had me on many times before to talk about our unclean voter rolls and sloppy voting procedures in America that lead to low confidence. So we asked all the states to share their voter rolls with us so we could help clean them up through the SAVE database, make sure people who are dead or otherwise not entitled to vote are off the voter rolls. A third of the states complied with us, mostly Republican states. Some Republican states didn't, and all of the Democrat states refused to comply with us. And so we have 30 litigations going on around the country. Now, 2 weeks ago, I informed all of the election officials, senior election officials in the United States, that not only is it a crime to vote illegally if you're not a citizen, it's also a crime for an election official to knowingly allow people to vote illegally, i.e. making sure that if they knew they were on the voter rolls and didn't take them off, that's also a crime in the United States. And so less than 2 weeks later, we had this announcement from the governor of New Jersey. And so the first thing that I thought is, when did they know about this and what did they know and what is the true scope of this problem? At the same time that the governor is telling us that it's 6,600 people who, to be fair, according to this narrative, self-identified as non-citizens, there are many more, according to Department of Homeland Security, that perhaps upwards of 30,000 who are non-citizens who are on the voter rolls. And they could be there for reasons like they registered to vote deliberately, knowing that they're not citizens or otherwise. And so on top of that, these people who self-identified as non-citizens, over 400 of them voted. So they committed a federal crime by doing that. So we have a lot of questions. There is an investigation ongoing here, and this is not a New Jersey problem. And this is not, like the governor said, a glitch, an error, an isolated incident, a mistake, all of the spin that you're seeing in the press. This is something else. And blaming the software vendor isn't going to fly. We're going to follow up with them as well. But I think you're going to see this problem being repeated throughout the United States at a much larger scale than what the governor just admitted.
Harmeet, you mentioned that, I believe you said, was 30 states are not complying at all, some of them even red states.
Right.
How are we going to get there with these people? Meaning, I understand you're taking steps to try to get there, but is this one of those things where we're going to be blocked from the 3/5 of the states in the country?
I mean, we're not going to give up. I mean, we have had about 9 or 10 negative rulings from the federal courts, and we are appealing those. So we're awaiting a ruling in the Ninth Circuit. We have an en banc petition in the Sixth Circuit, and we will appeal these all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And ultimately, if the court says that the method that we sought to get these voter rolls, which on its face says the attorney general can request this information, doesn't have to have any particular hoops to jump through, isn't valid, then Congress needs to fix that. I mean, that's a problem that you and I both know. There are a lot of things that Congress needs to fix, and somehow they spend a lot of time on recess and not actually fixing these things. The Save America Act would actually fix several of these issues that we just discussed vis-a-vis New Jersey, because it would require states to run their databases through the SAVE Act, require voter ID. It wouldn't be so easy for people to get ballots and then illegally vote them. There would have to be a lot more cunning and shameless to be able to do that. And I think it wouldn't be worth the squeeze for most people. But when you make it very easy to cheat, like we do in America today, you're going to get cheating. And we've seen that not only in voting, but we've seen it in Medicare fraud and so many other arenas as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that's just totally accidental that it's so easy to cheat. Okay, Harmeet, let's switch gears here because there's a couple other things I want to get to with you before I let you go. Harvard, it appears that Harvard's been doing, at least allegedly, a bit of discrimination, haven't they?
A bit, yes. So we have two ongoing lawsuits against Harvard. One is because, kind of like the voter roll situation, Harvard is required as a recipient of federal funds to give us their data concerning their admissions, and they're refusing to do so. They're just hiding the ball. I wonder what they're hiding. Anyway, we're going to get it one way or the other. And secondly, we're suing them on anti-Semitism. But the latest investigation that I've opened up is that Harvard is taking approximately $630 million of funds from Chinese entities or people that are a portion of which are restricted to benefiting only Chinese nationals. This is illegal in our law. You cannot condition or segregate Americans off of receiving these types of benefits. It's discrimination under our federal civil rights laws. So we've opened up an investigation to understand the scope of this problem. I'm focusing on China in the first wave, but the university also receives restricted grants / funding from other foreign countries that also go to benefit foreign students. And so we're going to be tackling that, because why is the American taxpayer stroking checks to Harvard when Harvard is taking money from abroad to the tunes of billions of dollars and then giving it to foreign students? This seems to not be a good cost-benefit analysis for the United States, in addition to being illegal.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't. Okay, staying along that same theme, medical school in California is apparently admitting people based on race. Now, my question is not about how sick and evil that is. Didn't the Supreme Court rule on this and say you can't do this?
The Supreme Court absolutely did. Students for Fair Admissions is one of the landmark cases during my lifetime in anti-discrimination law. And it is my job here at the Civil Rights Division to enforce that important change in the law that confirmed that good discrimination, so-called affirmative action, is no more legal than bad discrimination. And it is 2026 in America. And so, however, this culture of discriminating and putting your thumb on the scale to benefit certain minorities at the expense of others is so deeply ingrained that, you know, they can't quit it. And so you're seeing, and the medical schools, by the way, of all the schools that I'm looking at nursing and undergrad and law and all that, law's pretty bad. The medical schools are the worst. They are the most woke, the most entrenched, and the most self-righteous. You see that on hearings on Capitol Hill. UC San Diego, knowing that it could no longer use race as an explicit factor for admissions, uses personal statements of hardship as a proxy for race. And so they're just using this blatant back door. And how do I know they're discriminating? Because the MCAT scores of Black and Hispanic students who are admitted are substantially lower than those of white and Asian students. And you're much more likely, many times more likely, to get admitted if you are a Black or a Hispanic student with a quote unquote hardship letter than somebody who's simply struggling through and excelling on merit. And of all the disciplines, Jesse, I'm sure you would agree, where you don't want that person to be woke, it's your doctor. You really want the best and brightest. And again, our tax dollars are subsidizing these educations to the tunes of billions of dollars. And we deserve to know that the best and brightest are getting those positions in American medical schools, which are frankly artificially cartel limited. We need more medical schools, but with the ones we have, we should make sure American students all have equal opportunity there.
Yeah, nobody wants a DEI surgeon standing over them with a scalpel in their hand. Okay, so Harmeet, can you riddle me this as best you can? It's not hard to figure out why medical schools would be self-righteous. Anyone who's known a few doctors can see that. But why would they be the most far left? You think of, at least you would hope these people are highly intelligent. What am I missing?
Look, it's a combination of academia removed from reality plus this God complex, I think. I'm just psychoanalyzing here. But I can rattle off a dozen universities that I've been investigating, and the medical, like everyone else comes to the table. They're like, okay, we'll stop discriminating. Sorry, we're going to take that down. The medical schools are like, nope, we're going to keep doing it. I mean, you've seen these doctors testify in Congress about whether men can get pregnant, and they won't even answer that. This is absolutely scary to me, and anyone who's been a consumer of young medical support over the last few years knows exactly what I'm talking about. And so it needs to end. And so we're doing our part on the admissions front, but you know, these faculty self-select, other people like them. You can't get tenure without being super, super woke and the right race and color and, you know, sexual preference. And that's been the case for decades. So it's going to take us some time to unwind that.
Armeet, keep going. Appreciate you as always. Thank you. All right. I think we made some positive steps on the deportation front. At least that's what I'm hearing. We'll ask Katie Zachariah about that in a moment. Before we go to Katie, I want to go to you and talk to you about your debt situation. Do you have high interest debt? I know it sucks. I know. When you're paying 25% on something, 30%. You don't even want to tell people, do you? It's embarrassing. Look, you don't have to be embarrassed, and you don't have to be stuck in it for life. If you have a mortgage, what you need to do right now is go to AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse and find out how they can help you. They help people just like you get out of that soul-sucking debt. AmericanFinancing.net/Jesse. We'll be back. Are we getting a secret deportation court? Look, I'm one of these people who wants all 107 million foreigners out of my country. So anytime I find out anything that might be shipping more of them out, I celebrate. That's who I am. Joining me now, Katie Zachariah, Senior Communications Advisor for Truth Social. All right, Katie, give us the nitty gritty on this stuff because you're normally pretty boned up on it. Do we have a secret deportation court now? Please tell me the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. We've had this deportation court since 1996, and it's designated for very special circumstances when you have a terrorist who and their family members who, if by releasing this information public, it would put the investigation and everything around it into jeopardy. So there is a reason for this court. It is not arbitrary. It is actually very intentional, and it is in the best interest of the United States to keep a lot of these terrorists and the investigations surrounding them confidential. And so this should be a bipartisan issue. There should be not one Democrat, maybe Mom Donnie, but I don't know if he's a Democrat anymore, coming out against it, Jesse, because this is extremely sensitive, extremely, it's in the national security of the United States and in our national security interests to keep these things confidential.
Okay, now let's shift gears to the possible negative front, Katie. It's well documented. Barack Obama counted rejecting people at the border as deportations. That's why to this day, your liberal Aunt Peggy will tell you that he deported more people than anyone else, which of course he didn't. And we don't like that kind of lying because rejecting someone at the border is not deporting somebody. There are allegations. Daily Wire put out a story. We hit a million million deportations, but a third of those numbers are people who were rejected at the border. What's going on?
Yeah, there's a big difference between interior enforcement and interdictions and or border enforcement and deportation or turning people away at the border through CBP. And the numbers we want to focus on for our sake, because President Trump has decisively secured our border. We have an extremely active CBP and CBP air and marine operation and Coast Guard operation, interdicting a lot of these vessels out on the water and also at our border and also at our airports. But what we really want to focus on are the interior numbers, interior enforcement numbers, which is what ICE is doing, which are the deportations, which we've seen a lot of, where either there's a traffic stop or they're going into homes, or they are at what we saw over the weekend at Home Depot parking lots, where they know and have good information that there is an illegal alien that they need to deport. Look, There is a CBP home app that all of these illegal aliens can use. They can sign up for it. It's $2,600. All they have to do is get the app, download it, and they can be deported. They also won't have any strikes against them if they choose to self-deport. And they also get a cushion of cash. But they're not doing that. And I think one of the reasons they're not doing that is because perhaps they're not fearing that deportation is coming to a city near them. And so what we need to get a hold of are stronger interior enforcement numbers, in my opinion. That's definitely my opinion. But I live in California, Jesse. I live in a sanctuary state and sanctuary city. I fled Brentwood because, which is proper LA, but I fled because it became uninhabitable for many of the reasons that people are complaining about having illegal aliens in your city. And so when we have cities protecting groups of people that have come here breaking the law, and we have a mayor like Karen Bass, who's giving cash cards to illegal aliens to stay home to avoid and evade federal enforcement, there need to be active operations specifically in areas where they're told that they don't have to fear being deported, because that's where they go, Jesse.
Katie, you know what? We're going to pause right there and focus on your area, because I was just in LA a month or so ago and I was shocked. I mean, obviously I've been around quite a bit. I've been to LA quite a few times. I was shocked at how filthy and frankly dangerous the place felt. It was like Tijuana, Mexico, in certain parts of Los Angeles, the second biggest city in the United States of America. How quickly has that place degraded? Did this happen the last year, 5 years, 20 years?
So yeah, Los Angeles, as you mentioned, I mean, I'm a native Californian. I was born in Orange County, grew up on the Central Coast, went to Pepperdine, was out in Malibu for undergrad and law school. Look, Los Angeles has deteriorated to a degree that is almost, it's almost unrecognizable. And I left in 2021 because I have kids and there's no chance I'm raising my kids in a city where I can't walk down the street without a naked man wielding a machete through Wilshire Boulevard. This is not a joke. This is not hyperbole. So What we've seen is what I saw was in about 2017, they moved the metro out to Santa Monica. So it brought that kind of interior inner Los Angeles crime and homelessness out to Santa Monica, out to Venice Beach. So from my vantage point, a lot of the coastal areas got much worse when they brought the metro out. But this was always a problem, and it was never getting fixed. It wasn't fixed by Eric Garcetti, our wonderful, not so wonderful mayor. And it hasn't been fixed by Mayor Bass. Spencer Pratt was really only bringing practical solutions, like we want to get rid of the homelessness crisis, we want to get rid of the drug crisis, and we want to make our streets safe. And yet that's not a winning policy in Los Angeles. As you and I have talked about, maybe the people voted for him, but it didn't actually translate to the polls. So what's happened was also the combination of these sanctuary policies, where they are literally, our streets are literally being flooded with people who are not legal residents, who are not legal citizens, who came here illegally. And many of them, and you can see these interviews on the streets, many of them are living on Skid Row, having been promised a much better life in California, and yet they're living in a tent. And I can remember one of these interviews, this family was from Colombia, and he said, "Is this a better life for you than when you were in Colombia?" And he was like, "No, I was told to come here for a better life, and I would love to go. I would love to go back," because they're being sold a bill of goods, Jesse. And until you get to the heart of the problem, which is they're being told that they can come here and then they're not being given what they've been promised, until you get to the heart of that problem, you're not going to have a fix to Los Angeles. Democrats are good at destroying great cities and states.
I want a machete so bad. I actually don't even own one. I've almost bought one many times, but you know what? That's not important right now. What is important is the midterms, because I really don't want to see Democrats take back the House of Representatives and, God forbid, the United States Senate. But the poll numbers do not look good for us right now, Katie. That's just the bottom line. We're the GOP is not trusted more than the Democrats are, even on the economy, which is bonkers, but it's true. We can't ignore reality. What do we need to be doing right now?
It's a shame. The House just passed decisive bills just yesterday. I mean, in a clean sweep, I was pretty impressed. Outside of the one big, beautiful bill, yesterday was a pretty historic hallmark for a Republican Congress. And I think, Jesse, they're getting the message that President Trump is delivering on everything that he has said. He has put into place so many of the promises that he mentioned, and yet the House hasn't followed up on it. Let's just go down and talk about the Save America Act for a second. This is an 80-20 issue, and yet the Republicans can't get it through. Now, they clipped it on into the bills that were passed yesterday, and we'll see if it gets traction. That the House wasn't the problem with the Save America Act. It's been our wonderful Senate. And if we can actually get some historic things done for the president outside of the one big beautiful bill through the House, then they can have a track record to claim success on. But the bigger problem, everyone wants to blame President Trump. He's actually certainly not the problem in this situation. The House Republicans, the Senate Republicans, these people are responsible for delivering on the mandate that 78 million plus Americans voted for in voting for President Trump, and they have failed to do so. We won the House, the Senate, and all seven swing states, and yet we're sitting on our hands when we have an opportunity. And the Democrats, Jesse, aren't holding back. They are putting their platform right out there. Kamala Harris has said it. Many of others have said it. Pack the Supreme Court and the Electoral College, you know, basically eviscerate what our Constitution has provided for us. So this, the responsibility is on the House and Senate to ensure that they deliver so they can be reelected and deserve reelection in November, Jesse.
All right, speaking of Dome, a New Hampshire poll just came out. Dome was on there, but she was not in the lead. AOC was in the lead, and Rear Admiral Buttigieg was up there. Look, I don't think AOC is going to be the nominee, but I'm not a nutball Democrat who votes in that primary. If she can avoid slamming into that wall and getting fat, is she going to potentially be the Democrat nominee for president?
Well, they've hit a new low if AOC is their top contender and then Buttigieg is right there. But again, we've talked about this, Jesse. Gavin Newsom was soaring for a while, but what happened? He had to fall back on policy positions in order to gain momentum, and he has no policy positions to fall back on. His track record is abysmal. Kamala Harris wasted the DNC's money and decisively lost all seven swing states because President Trump beat her so wonderfully. So the DNC is probably a little bit scared to run her again, knowing she can't win, especially because on our side, we have great candidates. So going back to your question, is it AOC? Look, if it's AOC, I think that's a gift to the Republican Party yet again, just like a similar to Kamala, because we have amazing candidates across the spectrum. We have J.D. Vance, we have Marco Rubio, we have a potential Ron DeSantis. These people have incredible track records, are brilliant, have done so much already for the country, either Marco Rubio in his time in the Senate or as Secretary of State, J.D. in his time in the Senate as Vice President, or Governor DeSantis, as he has governed the best state in the union and has decisively made it so. So I think whoever they put up, Jesse, we stand a strong chance because on our side, we have amazing candidates that can beat them on policy, on experience, and on delivering for the American people, which none of their candidates can actually do, including AOC, and especially AOC.
Especially AOC. Katie, be good.
Thank you.
All right. Minnesota is a dumpster fire. I don't want it to be a dumpster fire because I like the land of 10,000 lakes. Let's talk to Liz Collin about all the insanity going on up there. You know, she'll give us a good look. Before we talk to Liz, I want to talk to you about what does America First mean? Well, you understand border security, things like that. But you and I have certain responsibilities when it comes to being America First. I think you would agree with me that we want American jobs, right? American jobs. We're tired of our jobs going to foreigners. Who's your wireless company? My wireless company, Pure Talk, is led by a Vietnam veteran, two tours in Vietnam. My wireless company helps veterans back on their feet. My wireless company doesn't have contracts, no cancellation fee. They're on the same network as one of the big guys, and my wireless company hires Americans who speak English. Make the switch. That's America First. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
You now have all the money that you gain. It's in the billions, not millions, in the billions you gain from them paying taxes. Now, these employers, okay, you take that money and you use it to legalize people. You bring it to, you know, because right now a lot of the people, they can't afford $5,000 to $15,000 to go through the system to be legalized. Right. I went down to Florida and checked it all out and went and people that are coming in legally.
Well, I know that farmers would be thrilled with something like this because
they all would be.
Okay. Joining me now, senior reporter, Alpha News, the great Liz Collin. Okay, Liz, so maybe you can square a circle for me here. Trump, who is the deportation president, he ran on it, he's deporting people, has enthusiastically endorsed Mike Lindell to be governor of Minnesota. Mike Lindell is now publicly pushing for taxpayer-funded amnesty. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can square this one. I would call it a pretty hectic 24 hours, Jesse, for Mike Lindell from his campaign. There's been deleted posts, clarifications. We had this 18-page document that was released last night outlining this immigration reform policy, as he calls it. We know that that document repeatedly refers to illegal aliens as undocumented immigrants, explicitly stating the plan kind of as this alternative to mass deportations, as Lindell puts it. But it would give an illegal alien without a criminal conviction a six-month window to obtain a worker visa card. And the plan calls for the immediate deportation of those with a gross misdemeanor or felony conviction. Lindell's campaign doubling down, saying today that it's fake news to call this amnesty. Tweeting that, I know, just a couple of hours ago. He says he wants people here illegally to be fingerprinted, documented, and vetted. But as you can imagine, his Republican opponents ahead of the August 11th primary, that's when that's taking place in Minnesota, they're pouncing on this, coming out against his plan, saying that this sure sounds like amnesty and something they would expect from Governor Tim Walz and not Mike Lindell here.
Yeah, in a Republican primary, I'm sure that's going to go over like a fart in church. But the question is, with Trump's endorsement, primaries coming August 11th, I'm assuming, Liz, you would know this way better than me. I'm assuming it's too little too late. The Trump blessing, Mike Lindell, is he running away with it?
You know, I do think that there's been a bit of a pivot, or at least people maybe are taking a harder look this time around, because it does seem like there have been some statements that have been made off the cuff and then maybe some backpedaling or clarification. So some concerns, I guess, with his wording on certain issues. We saw that last night at a bit of a town hall as well. But you're right, it is awful close. How many people are even tuned into the news cycle this time of year in the summer and whatnot, when it is actually nice here, as you know, Jesse. So we shall see, and we'll see how this all plays out very soon.
Liz, how blue do you think this place is? And I'm asking because obviously we have a Senate race, the gubernatorial race. Tim Walz is in all kinds of hot water. Is this state close enough that voter anger about this or that can swing it? Or is this, we're just arguing about California and we all already know the outcome?
You know, I think there is some hope this time around. I mean, what would it take, right? Between Somali fraud, we have horrific violence, which I think we're going to cover a bit as well. That seems to be out of control. Minneapolis topping the list, actually, as far as summer robberies and smash and grabs and whatnot, just that city alone topping the charts. So it does seem that people are ready for change. A reason, obviously, that Walz stepped aside. Amy Klobuchar now taking his place. But this Republican primary is getting pretty ugly here in the final days, no doubt about that.
Yeah, so let's talk about that violent crime a little bit, Liz. As ugly as the subject may be, I saw a little local news story on the television, a Minneapolis story where, I want to make sure I get this right, a St. Paul man butchered three people. What part of St. Paul was this guy from?
Well, that would be the part of Ethiopia. So, no, he's not a St. Paul man. An Ethiopian immigrant, just a horrific story out of St. Paul. Segab Benesu is his name. He's been charged now with triple murder, a man, two women at an apartment complex. This was execution-style murders, essentially over a $65 a garage fee dispute. Those are the details in the complaint. But also, interestingly enough, won't surprise you here, Benesu made some comments that the local media not reporting at all, but he told police when he was finally arrested hours later for these horrific crimes that he hated the American system. And that's what this was all about. It sounds like he was trying to get his wife and children here for years. And this was kind of like the final straw. He blames the American system for his divorce. But yes, conveniently, most of those words are left out of how the mainstream media is reporting this horrific story.
Yeah. Well, I hate parking fees, too, but I usually just complain under my breath while I fish my credit card out of my pocket. Let's switch to Tim Walz pardoning a sex offender and then getting angry that he was deported. Liz, I can't understand this because on its face, it's so gross. It's so outlandish that surely no political party that wants to get elected would do it. But these people just do it.
You know, I know I'm thinking back to, I wasn't on the show that long ago. We were talking about our new documentary, Minnesota Mao, and we were talking about just how hard it was to kind of get all of these, connections to Walz and communism, Maoism in that documentary. And then we have this happen just weeks later after putting out Minnesota Mao. You can watch that, minnesotamao.com. But yeah, this Tu Li Vang, he is charged with raping a 10-year-old girl over the course of 2 years. Again, horrific details in this case. But then you have the Board of Pardons, the Minnesota Board of Pardons, which is made up of Governor Tim Walz, Attorney General Keith Ellison, and also Chief Justice Natalie Hudson. They all vote unanimously to grant this pardon. So then you're wondering, okay, so how is Walz going to try to spin this or defend this decision? You know what he says, Jesse? He says, "We all shouldn't be judged by our worst day." Those were his public comments when the media asked him about this after this guy was deported, thankfully, by the Trump administration.
Our worst day. Yeah. What's new on the Derek Chauvin front? Obviously, the guy got completely railroaded. Now he rots in prison. Is there any movement here?
You know, there has been a bit of movement this summer. We've been following this over at alphanews.org. But Derek Chauvin's attorney, he's filed a new appeal with the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Greg Joseph is his new attorney. He says that Chauvin has been denied the opportunity for a fair trial and says the court has yet another opportunity here to fix this, should they care to do so for the sake of justice, not just in Minnesota, but throughout the country. He makes his stance very clear. He's been representing Chauvin now for the last couple of years. But this has been a notice that was filed just weeks ago to appeal, actually, the dismissal of a previous appeal filed last fall. So this all centers around the state charges. Remember, the state and federal charges are running concurrently. But this is kind of what's considered the, you know, you'd say kind of the last chance here for Derek Chauvin. And again, they're arguing to receive a fair trial, because anyone who followed this or really knows the story now, you can also check out The Fall of Minneapolis, that documentary, for more on this. Hard to find anyone who thinks that Derek Chauvin received a fair trial in the wake of this.
Yeah. Liz, all right, finally. Keying a car is a crime, fairly serious one. Did someone in Minnesota get promoted for that?
Yeah, the way you always ask these questions, they sound like I'm supposed to get... common sense answer, but not here. Yes, we just recently, Dylan Adams, he is now a supervisor with the state of Minnesota under the Minnesota Department of Human Services, DHS, as it's known, Jesse. So given a supervisor role, also a raise, but he was charged with keying multiple Teslas, very upset by President Trump, had some severe TDS. And also Elon Musk was not a fan of him. So during what seems to be one of his work days months ago, he went out and keyed multiple Teslas, as many as six. And now he's a supervisor, and he's also making a six-figure salary. By my math, he's gone now to a $52 an hour rate, received about a $4 an hour bump in pay. So that is the news here from Minnesota. I'm hoping you will be able to make sense of it like you always do, Jesse. We need some of that, I think.
Liz, I don't think both of us together could make any sense of this bonkers world we live in now. I appreciate your comeback. Lighten the mood. Next. I love impressions. I've always been like this. When I was a kid, you know, I loved the Police Academy movies. Did you ever see the Police Academy movies? And the one guy who could mimic all the sounds and everything, I used to sit there as a little skinny kid and just laugh until I had tears coming down my face. Anyway, Trump gets up, gives a speech. Some young man behind him who clearly knew he was going to be on camera. Well, here it was.
Any time in the history of our country, and Americans are working today more so than ever before. We have more jobs today than we've ever had. This is with this skirmish we have with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And I call it that because, let me tell you, they're getting hit so hard and they want to make a deal. But I say they're not ready to make a deal.
That's pretty good. Let's see it.
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.